Mark 15, chapter 46, Summit. Michael was worried about his friend Jim. Keying the radio microphone clipped to his chest strap, he called out, "Hey Jim, where the hell are you?" The two had developed a unique rapport, a solid friendship built upon mutual respect. They liked one another. Jim took another step, and he stopped. He was taking in 5 deep breaths for every step. The pace was painfully slow. The two climbing Sherpas with him, Pisang and Pertemba, they were patient, keeping their eyes on him each and every step he took. Hearing Michael on the radio perked him up. "What the hell do you want?" he replied with a chuckle. Michael smiled and said, "Hey, look, I'm going as slow as I can, waiting for you to catch up." Jim, now with a somber tone, replied, "Hey, I'm going as fast as I can. Seriously, don't wait. I'm okay. I believe I'll make it." The two men were separated by 1,000 feet on the southeast ridge of Mount Everest and had no idea of the drama above them and the drama occurring below them. Claudia knew they had lost a lot of time, so she and Narwag moved quickly towards the balcony. He turned up her oxygen to 4 liters per minute. They reached a turn at a large boulder and she stopped. Claudia looked ahead to see 3 headlamps moving higher, Jim, Pisang, and Pertemba. But then when she looked behind, all she saw were 2 headlamps moving lower, Pablo and Pisang. Her heart sank. Claudia asked Narwag, "Should I go back with him? Do we even have a chance to summit? What should I do?" Narwag looked at his watch. It was late. It was 4 a.m. They had 1,500 feet to go. If she was fast, she might be able to climb 300 feet an hour and summit around 9 o'clock that morning. But more likely, it was going to be 10 or even 11. It wasn't too late to summit, but they would run into a lot of traffic coming down from the summit. "We have time, Didi," Narwag replied. They turned at the balcony and began their quest. "Mingma, Mingma, no oxygen, no oxygen, help," Harper cried out, pulling her mask down, stepping very close to him. Mingma, not saying a word, made a fist and hit the tube running between her mask and the oxygen cylinder. He hit it hard. Shocked, he was pushed back a step. "Frozen," was all he said. She slipped the mask back up, immediately feeling the cool, refreshing flow of life-giving oxygen. It was a simple solution to solve a critical problem. "Happens," Mingma said as he began to walk across the narrow cornice traverse. With this short delay, Tony and Lapka and Dutch with Purba, they caught up with them. Now the 6 climbers moved steadily across the traverse. It was 4:08 a.m. and it was still dark. It's probably best that they didn't see what they didn't know. This section was the most exposed part of the climb. To their left, the mountainside dropped 8,000 feet down the southwest face. To their right, another stunning drop. This one 10,000 feet down the Kanchung face. The path was so narrow that 2 people couldn't pass each other on the 400-foot section. It was a one-way road. This was a real bottleneck of the route, and only their balance and the thin nylon fixed line kept them alive. With their oxygen working properly now, Harper and Mingma moved fast. They reached the Hillary Step a few moments after the traverse. The Hillary Step was named after Sir Edmund Hillary, who came upon it with Tenzing Norgay Sherpa in 1953. They neared the summit. Approaching it, Harper paused to inspect the obstacle. When the 7.8 magnitude Gorkha earthquake occurred in Nepal in 2015, the Hillary Step changed. The rock wall of car and house-sized boulders shifted and fell down the southwest face, making the famous obstacle more achievable. Previously, it was a 40-foot-high off-width crack between 2 boulders with another at the top that required careful navigation and presented extreme exposure. Most people could climb the step in a few minutes, but it became a bottleneck when inexperienced or fatigued climbers took 10, 15, perhaps even more to ascend. Even with the fixed rope, people had trouble. And on the descent, many people struggled then. But now everything had changed. As Harper approached the snow slope, Mingma turned around. "Hillary Slope," he said. She knew he was grinning by the gleam in his eyes. The first rays of the sun were just appearing. Staying clipped into the fixed line, they easily cleared the step and now followed a low-angle snow slope. Harper was only 197 feet from the summit. She turned around to see her 4 teammates cramponing up the step. "Hey, let's wait and summit together," Harper told Mingma. The pause allowed them to look around, but she knew the best view was yet to come. Jim, almost to the south summit, he was caught in a long line of climbers from other teams, maybe as many as 50. But he took solace in that the scrum was moving slowly, giving him cover. At the south summit, he and Pasang and Viterba took another break. The climbing Sherpa swapped out his bottled oxygen with a fresh tank. Running at 4 liters per minute meant that he would go through at least 2 more bottles than those climbing at lower rates. He also took the opportunity to look around. He knew that by reaching the south summit, his chances of summiting were excellent. Thank you, he said to the Sherpas as they put the bottle back in his pack. You're welcome. John Paul had been shadowing Jim. He sincerely wanted to see him summit. Hey, I'm going to hang here and wait for Claudia. Narwhang told me over the radio they're moving well. They should be here soon, so you go on. Hopefully, we'll meet at the top. Aaron and Bart approached the Hillary step. Almost there, Bart said to Aaron, who pulled his mask down and flashed a huge grin. As Aaron stepped on the snow slope, he slipped. Soft snow had gathered underneath his crampons. He used his ice axe to hit the side of his boot to shape the snow clod away. Not as cold as we thought if the snow is getting soft. Claudia and Narwhang were making excellent time and were halfway up the southeast ridge. She took off her clear goggles and put on her mountain sunglasses. Seeing the sunrise made her feel better, but she was worried about Pablo. He's at the South Col. It was Dahl on the radio with an update on Pablo. Is he okay? Harper asked. Yes, Dee Dee, he's fine, just tired. Claudia took a deep breath and sent out a thought of gratitude. He would remain there until she got back. The rising sun kissed the cornice to her right as Harper and Mima approached the summit. Her mind was a blur. She had random thoughts of her training, of Mark, and of her kids. She thought of her mom and immediately felt a lump in her throat. Harper and her mom had talked of Everest for decades, but in recent years, her mom had lost her memory from Alzheimer's. Harper told her mom that she was going to Everest. In a moment of lucidity, her mom smiled and said, "Honey, well, you just do well, but please come back home to all of us. We need you." As Harper thought of that moment, tears welled up in her ears, eyes. They took a few more steps toward a snow branch, and the prayer flag covered summit. They could go no higher. Mi'kma keyed the radio and let out a yell. Summit! Chapter 47, Descending from the Summit and a Rescue. Harper took her sat phone out of her pack and pressed number 1 on the keypad. She had dreamed of this moment. We made it. I'm on the summit of Mount Everest. I'm up here with Mi'kma and a few other teammates. She talked until she needed to put her oxygen mask back on, not due to the low level of oxygen, but because of the excitement. I'm so proud of you. Congratulations, my love, Mark said louder than he needed to. He was thinking of his wife on the summit of Everest and for some reason felt he needed to shout. Thank you so much for all your love and support, honey. I love you so much, Harper told her husband. Put the phone on speaker so the kids can hear me. The next sound she heard was the squeals of joy from Jay and Olivia. You made it. How does it feel? Olivia asked. Thank you, sweetie. How does it feel? Well, how does it feel? It feels, her voice broke up as tears ran down her face. It feels wonderful. As she hung up the phone, the sun had risen enough to cast a shadow of Everest across western Nepal. Harper just stood there, trembling with emotion. It didn't take long for Tony with Lopka and Dutch with Purba to arrive. They had a group hug on top of the world. Tony sat down on the snow bench that the Sherpas had built years ago. The summit was now getting more crowded as another 100 climbers arrived. 30 arrived from the Tibetan side. The snow bench was at capacity. Dutch came over to Tony. How you doing? Tony didn't move. His down suit hood was pulled over his head, covering his face. Dutch patted his shoulder. I understand. Congratulations, he said, walking away to thank Purba again. Tony was lost in emotion, tears running down his cheeks. He had accomplished a lifelong dream. He first read about Everest expeditions in the magazine Adventure. Now he was part of the Everest history. He marveled at how the early teams dressed in 8 layers of gabardine, wool, cotton, and silk clothing. They used hobnail boots, climbed with hemp ropes and leaky oxygen systems. As he sat there in his top-of-the-line 850-fill goose-down suit, 8,000-meter boots with footbed warmers and thick mittens, he wasn't cold, even when the wind picked up. But his thoughts were more about what this summit meant to him, the sacrifices he had made, how he longed to share it with his ex-girlfriend back home. He looked up to see his teammates, those people he had chosen to distance himself from for the past 5 weeks. Why did I do that? Sometimes you have to climb a mountain to find yourself, he thought. An introvert, his behavior came naturally. He stood up and walked over to Dutch. He pushed his hood back, pulled his mask down, and took his sunglasses off. He smiled and held his arms out. The two men embraced on the summit, sharing a moment that would be etched in their minds for eternity. Halfway, Harper told Dutch and Tony. Yeah, I think it was that American Visters or someone who said getting to the top is optional, getting down is mandatory. Dutch never lost his wit and humor. So let's go down. I'm hungry. Three men, three climbing Sherpas left the summit, all clipped into the fixed rope. It would take about 2 hours to reach the balcony, another hour to the South Col. After a short break, then 2 hours to Camp 2, where they would spend the night. They were moving fast downhill, but sharing the line with climbers coming up. I hope we don't get stuck at the Hillary Step, Harper said to Mingma. Michael, Aaron, and Bart, along with their personal Sherpas, were coming up the rope, only a few minutes away from the summit. Where's Jim? Harper asked Michael. He was at the South Summit the last I heard. I think he's going to make it. Congratulations, he said. And to you, Tony added. See you back at the Col. The crowd had thinned out a bit as the first summiters were leaving. Now a line of 40 people slithered down from the summit. The three men, the Sherpas, shared the summit, putting 12 of the 20 members and Sherpas from the Mount Everest guides on the summit. Only Jim and Claudia were left, plus John Paul. Bart walked over to Pemba. Thank you so much. I wouldn't be here if it wasn't for you. You helped me when I got sick, and again today. Thank you, thank you, thank you. Pemba, with his mask off, smiled and held up his gloved fingers. Number 10, 10 summits. They shook hands, and then they hugged. Aaron and Michael exchanged congrats and asked a member from a different team to take pictures of all six of them. The group spent about half an hour on the summit. Michael hoped his friend would arrive before they left, but knew he needed to get down because he was using up his precious oxygen. Lopka, his personal Sherpa, had turned the flow down to 1 liter per minute to save gas. They soon caught up with a line of climbers now queued at the top of the Hillary Step. Similar to pre-2015, when rappelling down the rock face was a bottleneck, now a similar pattern occurred. The face was too narrow and the rock boulders too unstable to support two ropes. Everyone going up or down shared the same rope. A guide from another team took control. Stop! He shouted to a climber clipped on the rope as he started to ascend. We have 30 people up here and we need to get down, he continued. The climber stepped back but remained clipped in. The summiters quickly down climbed the snow slope while always staying clipped in. A line of climbers waited at the bottom, some unclipped to allow the faster climbers to pass them. At the bottom of the step, Michael found what he was looking for. Jim was next in line to go up to the Hillary Step. You're going to make it, he said, hugging his friend. Jim just smiled. Hell, I might, but I also have to get back down, Pisang said through his mask. You will. They moved slowly from the step to the summit, arriving at 7:04 a.m. It had taken Jim 13 hours. By now, he'd run through 4 bottles of oxygen. Pratimba grabbed a fresh bottle and swapped it out. He didn't want him to run out on the traverse or in the middle of the ridge on the descent. Thank you both so much, he said to the Sherpas. You're welcome. Jim sat down on the bench. Jean-Paul, come in. I'm on the top. He heard static, but no response. Jim was grateful to Jean-Paul for believing in him. He pulled a water bottle out of his pack and took a long drink. He looked around. Standing up, he slowly turned, taking in the views of China, Bhutan, Nepal. Makalu looked small, as did Choyoyu, but they were both 8,000-meter mountains. He was standing on the top of the world on a cloudless day in May. Claudia and Narwang did the last steep climb to the South Summit. Good to see you. It was John Paul meeting them. He'd waited there for an hour. What are you doing? Claudia asked. Oh, just hanging out, waiting for you. How are you? Pablo's back at the Col with Dawa. Yes, I know Dawa radioed Narwang and let him know. I hope he's okay, Claudia said, glancing over his shoulder toward the Col. They down climbed from the top of the South Summit and waited for a group of 23 to cross the Cornice Traverse. They easily ascended the Hillary Step now that the summit gang had cleared out. Soon, Claudia stood on top of the world. "Dawa, Dawa, come in. Can you put him on?" she said over the radio from the summit. She released the key button, nervous. She hadn't heard anything for several hours. Dawa tried with his radio. In Sherpa, he called for Dawa. Again, no response. John Paul tried. "Dawa, Dawa, this is John Paul. Is everything okay down there?" Dawa, hearing the radio in his cooking tent, hustled over from Pablo's tent. Picking the radio up, he said urgently, "No, John Paul, we have a big problem. Pablo is having trouble breathing. He's in a sleeping bag. We have him on O's. We gave him Nephedin, but I think we may need to get him down to Camp 2 and call a rescue helicopter, or maybe even a long-line rescue from Camp 3. It's serious." Chapter 48, Climbers in Trouble on the Descent. "Let's get down ASAP," John Paul said to Narwang and Claudia. They had arrived at the summit of Everest only 5 minutes ago to learn that Pablo was in trouble at the South Col and he needed to be flown to Kathmandu. "What happens now?" Claudia asked John Paul as they approached the top of the Hillary Step on the descent. "Dawa has a lot of experience in dealing with HAPE. He knows what to do." Dawa began organizing the difficult effort it would take to get Pablo down to at least Camp 3, if not Camp 2, for a helicopter rescue. He used his sat phone to call Adventure Rescue. "Yes, we have one of your clients at the South Col. He needs a helicopter evac as soon as possible. He has pulmonary edema and is struggling to breathe. Already gave him 10 milligrams of nephedrine and have him on O's at 6 liters per minute." On the other end of the phone, the nurse made a few suggestions, but all agreed that helicopter rescue was necessary. "We'll contact our chopper company immediately, and they'll call you on your sat phone to arrange details. Can you manage a long line from 3? Asked the Alpine rescue specialist at the firm. Longline helicopter rescues are the most dangerous and difficult rescues in high-altitude mountains. They're regularly performed in the Alps, Canada, and around the world. However, these elevations are significantly lower than at 23,000 feet at Camp 3 on Everest. The air density there is 60% less compared to sea level, and the helicopter has trouble just flying, much less picking someone up. So the chopper is stripped of all the seats other than the pilots, loaded with minimal fuel, all to lower the weight and increase the lift. In a longline rescue, a 200-foot line of synthetic fibers attached to a bracket on the belly of the chopper. Sometimes there's a platform attached to the line, but these high-altitude cases, it's a simple industrial-sized ring called a welded keeper ring that the ground crew clips to a locking carabiner onto it. The ring is then clipped to the victim's harness or rescuer's harness if available. On May 19, 2013, helicopter pilot Maurizio Fulli executed the highest longline rescue ever when Maurizio piloted the chopper. Simone Moreau and Armin Sinor coordinated events from the ground. He flew a Eurocopter AS-350B3 to Camp 3 and rescued a climber who had no arms and he had broken his ankle. To rescue Pablo would require similar coordination between the pilot and the team on the ground at Camp 3. Harper and Mingma overheard this unfolding drama on the radio. "Let's go as fast as we can," Harper said. "I want to get down." Mingma nodded but added, "Didi, he's good with Dawa and the four Sherpas at the Col. They'll take care of him." Harper understood, but also put herself in Claudia's situation. It would take her at least 3 hours to get to the Col. Hopefully Pablo would be at Camp 3 or lower by then. But if he was still in the Col, Harper wanted to see him for herself so Harper could tell Claudia about his condition. All the climbers from John Paul's team were aware of the situation and were moving down the mountain. But Jim was struggling. "John Paul, I think we have a problem with Jim," Passan called over the radio. Pertemba checked his oxygen flow and turned his regulator up to 6 liters per minute. The latest generation of regulators allowed for higher rates than in previous years. Jim stumbled back to the south summit. His legs were failing. He was extremely weak. "Okay, get some calories in him and some water. Just take it slow and easy. We don't need another rescue. Keep me posted every half hour," John Paul instructed the two Sherpas. Pablo was drifting in and out of consciousness while Dawa sat in the tent beside him, monitoring his oxygen levels. He was in the low 70s, a very dangerous level. He called back to the nurse at Adventure Rescue, who gave him more advice and additional meds to administer. Pablo opened his eyes. "Where am I?" he asked. Dawa gently talked to him. "Can you walk?" "Kaling and Tenzing, plus the other Sherpas and I will take you to Camp 3, where a helicopter will fly you to base camp and then to Kathmandu. They can't fly up here to the Col. It's too high for a rescue. Pablo nodded his head at the additional meds began to take effect. He knew enough to know that he was in trouble and that he had to participate in his own rescue. Dava put Pablo's big boots on his feet and zipped up his down suit. He reached around the young man to fasten his climbing harness. Kaylee found an extra fixed line. He and the other Sherpas tied one end onto their harness with a figure eight knot and began wrapping most of the line around their shoulder. They left about 30 feet free, but most of the coil would be in their hand while leaving about 15 feet between them and Pablo. They tied the other end onto his harness. He'd be held tight by the Sherpas. If he fell, he wouldn't go anywhere. Certainly not down the Lhotse face. The plan was a short roping to the Geneva Spur, where they would have to navigate down climbing the rocky buttress. At the spur's base, they would use a tent fly to rig a sled of sorts to do a controlled drag down the steep Lhotse face to Camp 3. The thin nylon layer should work well against the hard snow. There would be two Sherpas behind and two in front to keep him in control. Dava would manage the overall operation. Jim stood up, but he was wobbly at the south summit, high on Mount Everest. Basang pulled a section of rope out of his pack and rigged a short rope on Jim. Pratimba started going lower, mindful of not being more than two steps in front of their charge. At each anchor, Pratimba managed to move the safety carabiner across to protection. Jim was on automatic now, almost in a hypoxic daze. "Go ahead and give him the shot," John Paul told the Sherpas at their next check-in. It was a short distance at the South Col on the top of the Geneva Spur, but it took the group an hour and a half. Pablo moved slowly. He had to stop every few minutes. Each Sherpa had two bottles of oxygen in their packs. Before down climbing, they swapped his almost empty cylinder for a new one. Climbers and Sherpas from other teams passed them. The weather forecast called for high winds and snow starting tomorrow, so everyone needed to get down to at least a Camp 2. Also, this meant that the helicopter could only fly today, not tomorrow. The situation was becoming critical. "Can we help?" said the same guide who did the crowd control at the top of the Hillary Step. "Yes," said Dava. "Can you find and mark a flattish section at Camp 3? We're doing a long line rescue. We should be there in about 3 hours, faster if the sled works well," Dava said, stretching out his hand to thank the Swiss guide. Being from Switzerland, he knew exactly how this type of rescue worked and how dangerous it was at this altitude. At the top of the spur, the four Sherpas were roped to Pablo. Now the ropes were 2 feet long. They held him tight as he took small steps down the rocky face. It was slow, but Pablo did well. He was helping to save himself. At the base, he sat up exhausted. "Wake up! Don't sleep!" Dava screamed at him. If he fell asleep, he might never wake up. Dava had to be firm. Gazing pulled the tent fly out of his pack. The Sherpas used their ropes to tie onto the fly, putting Pablo in a nylon cocoon. He was about to take the ride of his life. "Jim and us, we're at the balcony," Basang said in the radio microphone. "Great job," John Paul radioed back. The meds were helping along with the high flow rate. "Jim, stay with it. Stay with us. Let the Sherpas help you, but also you have to help them help you." Harper arrived at the South Col. "He's gone." A Sherpa from another team had been helping Dawa and Pablo, told Mingma. "He's gone? What do you mean, he's gone?" Harper asked with fear in her voice. "They took him to Camp 3. They're on the Lhotse face now. The Sherpa told them..." Okay. I thought you meant he was gone." Harper began to breathe again. Tony, Michael, Aaron, and Bart, and Dutch all arrived at the South Col. Everyone was back except for Claudia and Jim and the Sherpas in support. John Paul, Narwang, and Claudia began flying down the southeast ridge. They caught up with Jim as he was leaving the balcony. "Narwang, please stay with Pasang and Pimbo to help with Jim. I'll take Claudia down. We'll try to catch Dawa and help," John Paul's shouting orders out, clearly in control. The section between the balcony and the South Col is a short distance, only about 1,200 feet. While it takes about 3 hours to go up, going down is less than a third of that. If they got to the South Col, took a very short water and food break, then went fast, they might catch Pablo as they arrived at Camp 3. "I'm so worried," Claudia told John Paul. He blinked his eyes and took a step off the flat balcony area. Clipped into the rope, they moved with urgency in the bright morning sun. They had been on the move for 10 straight hours. "He's on the Lhotse face," Harper said, hugging Claudia as she arrived at the coal. The Sherpa said he was in tough shape, but felt that he would make it. "Darwin, the Sherpas are doing a great job." Tears were pouring down Claudia's face. Harper just held her tightly. "Let's leave in 15, John Paul told Claudia. "I want to come," Harper told him. Seeing the two women together, he knew that was the right thing. She could help. Harper was strong. "You bet, we could use the help." John Paul, Claudia with Nawang, Harper with Mingba left the South Coal, all still on O's. They arm wrapped down the Geneva Spur. It was faster than rigging a rappel. Now on the snow of the Lhotse face, they had a clear view of Camp 3, albeit the few yellow tents that remained this late in the season. They were tiny specks in the snow. "Chopper ETA is 1 hour. Fueling in Lukla now," came the radio update. Dawa looked at Galen. Both men had a look of resolve in their eyes. They'd made good progress to the yellow band. "This might be rough," Dawa told Pablo. He closed his eyes, but he was mindful not to go to sleep. "I understand." The five Sherpas drug his body across the rocky band and onto the hard-packed boot path that led to Camp 3. Jim now had two ropes attached to him as he and the Sherpas made their way to the South Coal. All the other members that remained at the coal were resting in their tents before leaving for C2. "I'm feeling better," Jim grumbled. "Hell, I might just make it," Pima replied.
"You will."
The Sherpa smiled, happy that his crusty character was reemerging. John Paul radioed to Passan. "You need to get everyone back to 2 today, no exceptions. Weather's moving in late tomorrow, and I want to get back to base before it hits." All the Sherpas heard the instructions and began to dismantle Camp 4 of the South Coal. They would leave one tent standing for Jim to rest, then bring it down with him. They knew it was going to be a long haul to get Jim back to Camp 2 today. Dawa, Galing, Tenzing, plus the other Sherpas paused for a break. They were at the highest tent platform at Camp 3. The Swiss guide called them on the radio frequency. "I marked the pad with a red X at 7,000 meters. That was the operating limit for this helicopter. It's going to be tight. "I'll stay here and manage comms with the pilot. I know him. He trained in my hometown of Chamonix." The team moved Pablo lower. Spotting the Swiss guide, they moved faster, skipping a desperately needed rest break. The Sherpas were breathing heavily. Their legs were tired. The three-hour haul of dead weight was taking a toll on them. In hindsight, it was good that John Paul and Dawa had placed four Sherpas on standby at the coal. If they had summited 15 hours earlier like the others, the rescue might have been impossible. "Listen," Dawa said as he reached the red X. "Rotors." The sound of the pulsating helicopter rotor blades became louder and louder as it crested the top of the Khumbu Icefall, then moving quickly above the broken ice of the Western Khumbu. "Okay, let's be ready to clip into the rescue line. The pilot will hover the chopper about 200 feet above us for 1 minute, no longer. We must be quick, but we got to be safe. The line is already deployed, so all we have to do is grab him and clip Pablo in. Tenzing, you're responsible for grabbing the line. Galen, back him up and help if needed, but it's really a one-person job. Dawa, you stand on the right, and I'll be on the left." Then, looking at Pablo, the Swiss shouted, "This is it. You must help, but don't fight. It'll be frightening. We'll clip you onto the line. I'll give the pilot a hand signal that he'll see through the windows in the chopper floor. Then he'll fly you back to base camp, and another chopper will get you to Kathmandu. You understand?" Pablo was overwhelmed. Was this really happening? His energy level was low. The meds had helped stabilizing, and the lower altitude had helped, but he still felt like he was fighting just to stay alive. He thought of Claudia. Nawang, Pisang, and Pimba escorted Jim to a tent in the South Coal. One of the other Sherpas brought a large thermos of hot lemon drink. Michael walked over and gave Jim a big hug. "Hell, I thought you were going to kiss me," he said with a scowl on his face, and he smiled. "You okay?" Michael asked his friend. "Yeah, but really beat up. I'm feeling better getting lower, plus they shot me up. Now I need to get to Camp 2. John Paul, Claudia, Nawang, and Harper with Mingma reached the top of Camp 3. The roar of the hovering helicopter was deafening, echoing off the walls of Lhotse and Nootsie. The chopper bobbed a bit, but was still remarkably still in the thin air. This pilot was an expert. There he is, Claudia said, pointing toward the group of men all standing together. The long line just dangled from the helicopter. The line went taut. The whine from the rotors raised up a pitch. Claudia watched her future mark, her Pablo, dangling 200 feet below a helicopter at 23,000 feet on Mount Everest as they flew away.